Some time ago, I was watching something on television, and there were details there regarding what were known as the Hungry 30s. And if you know a little bit about American history too, you will know that over there in many places, things were very tough, and there was very little work, and it was a big, big struggle for people to put bread on the table for their families. And along with that kind of situation, understandably, there comes a lot of anxiety. And it was the Depression time, of course, and no doubt many individuals were depressed as well because of the circumstances around them. But on that bit clip on television that I was watching, the president at that time was addressing a huge crowd of men. And I can't remember everything that he said in his address, or everything that I heard him say in his address, but I remember this. As he sought to instill in them an optimistic spirit, folks, that's important as Christians too. As he sought to instill in them an optimistic spirit and indeed a spirit of anticipation, he said to them, "Men, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. We have nothing to fear but fear itself." Sometimes that's the case with me. We fear fear. And fear gets a hold of us. And you know, as Joshua and those who had been traveling with him had been provided with all of their needs by the Lord had provided for their every need. And he promised them something in verse 2 of this book concerning Jericho. It says there, "And the Lord said unto Joshua, See, I have given into thine hand Jericho, and the king thereof, and the mighty men of valor." Jericho was a stronghold of wickedness. The name Jericho is a word which is associated with reek. If you've gone perhaps in very, very inner city areas to an area that is perhaps very undesirable, you might come out of there and say, "Well, that place reeks." And you know exactly what I'm talking about. Maybe you haven't been there, but somewhere else, and you could say, "Such and such a place, it reeks." Well, Jericho reeked, and that is what the word, it forces a city of the curse, but it was extremely strong and very frightening for people to look upon. And the Lord comes along to Joshua, and he's saying here, "Listen, I've given it into your hand." He didn't say you need to figure out some way through human ingenuity how you are going to scale the walls and how you're going to conquer the city, "but I have given it into your hand. And the king, being a notorious character, I've given you him as well. And all of those well-trained warriors that are there, I've actually given you them as well." And the Lord was seeking, as he so often does, to instill in Joshua, and consequently those that Joshua would relay the message to, a spirit of optimism and a spirit of anticipation. And Joshua, no doubt, when he listened to the Lord, would be hoping that anticipation would fill the ranks as they sought to do what God wanted them to do, to march around that particular city. And if you know something of the details there in chapter 6, you will know that they obeyed the Lord, and in a most unusual way, they were to shout, and the walls fell down flat. Now, archaeological digs confirm that this place, Jericho, was violently destroyed by walls collapsing. It's one place that I would really like to be. Just to go and to look there at the remaining walls in verse 20 there of the chapter, you will see that it says that the walls fell down flat. Well, some commentators believe that the word flat is actually associated with that which goes straight down. And certainly the evidence is there that the foundations gave way. They didn't fall over side roads. So they literally fell down flat. And the people in the chapter here, they were able to go and to ascend over the walls. This was a miracle of the Lord. But the important thing now for Joshua and those who were with him was that the walls were down. The Lord had moved, as he said he would do, and he had removed those walls, which were a huge obstacle to Joshua. No doubt, as they first approached Jericho, Joshua's mind was working overtime as he thought, what are we going to do with this? It's not a matter just of valor or numbers, but look at the size of them. What are we going to do? And maybe in 2018, and I know this has been the experience for some, you faced the walls. And you faced circumstances and you didn't know what you're going to do. And just like Joshua, you didn't know how you're going to get over them. But the Lord came along and helped you with the walls. And he dealt with the walls. And Christian, maybe you felt there wasn't an easy way forward. And maybe it hasn't been easy. But the Lord has made a way forward for you. And he's brought you right along now to almost the end of 2018. So the walls are down. And everything now is so changed as I look upon Jericho. And that brings us to our title this morning, Walls Down, What Now? Because after the Lord had done that, then there was something for the people to do. And isn't it true when the Lord deals with the walls, when we feel stuck and we can't go forward, and we don't know how to deal with it, isn't it true that whenever that happens, that anticipation comes into our mind and we're optimistic again? And we're thinking, maybe I can in the work of the Lord. I always think like this at this time of the year, wondering how we can encourage people how we can motivate ourselves and how we can help each other and strengthen each other and seek to go forward together and to make an impact. You look back over 2018, maybe the Lord hasn't moved in Achillea and Ballinderry and further afield indeed as the way you would want them to. Well, that has been the case regarding most Christians. There's still great barrenness, but there's still so much opportunity. And it's not all doom and gloom, because the Lord has still a work for his people to do. So we ask the question, really, walls down, what now? I just want you to notice some things very briefly this morning. I want you to notice, first of all, if you look there with me in verse 21, I want you to notice that encouragement drives progress. Encouragement drives progress. In verse 21 it says, and they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep and ass, with the edge of the sword. No doubt it was an awful place to be. And when you read verses like that, you think, you know, how terrible this was. And you know, this had to happen. But remember, Jericho was the city of the curse. It was a very, very wicked city. And whenever the walls came down, the people came in there and they made very great progress. Because it says there that they utterly destroyed all that was in the city. This was a huge place. A lot of people. And even though the walls were down, there still was that which could have been a hindrance to them. Don't we read over there in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 1, I'll read it quickly in verse 2. When the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land where thou goest to possess it, and hast cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites and the Girgazites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Do you see what it says at the end of verse 1? Greater and mightier than thou. That was not something that I'm sure they particularly looked forward to. And difficulties that are greater and mightier than us are not things that we look forward to. But the Lord said here to them, way back then, that you will utterly destroy them. And that is what it says in verse 21. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city. You see, God had ordered the destruction of that which was a terrible influence upon society. And folks, let's remember this. God is not ignorant in 2018 of that which is a terrible influence upon society. And that which is a bad influence upon society, or worse than bad, it grieves Christians. And sometimes we almost stall again in our own progressing with the Lord until we remember the walls. And look back and say, well, the wall was there before me. Maybe it was a wall of discouragement, a wall of despair, a wall of sorrow, a wall of confusion in our own mind, whatever the case might be. Remember, the Lord dealt with the wall, so he's able to help me to deal with what I have to do in the city. It's an awful thought, and, you know, Christians ought to love people and to care for their souls, but life shows us that there are people that can be a curse to society. A curse to society. Deuteronomy 20 and verse 18 says, "And they shall teach you not to do after their abominations, which they have done unto their gods. So should ye sin against the Lord your God." And it's most part of what I'm talking about today. The walls are down, what now? And we're looking at the first point. Is encouragement here was a driver of progress. It's most part of what I'm thinking about is your battle in mind with sin. And in school you've known about it. It's given you opportunities. You've been knocking at the door. And sin comes along, and so often sin is so aggressive in nature, it seems to increase if given half a chance. It certainly influences our thinking and consequently our actions, and it really changes who we are. It increases its influence, but we have to watch out because it infiltrates our families and our places of worship as well. And being lenient regarding sin is not what God was teaching the people here and teaching us as well. It needs thoroughly dealt with, brethren and sisters. Victory can help us to win other victories. Isn't that right? We sing sometimes, "Each victory will help you some others to win." But we want to be very, very careful. Over there in 1 Samuel 15, the verse 14, there have been instructions given clearly to slaughter all that was there. Saul was never reliable. He was always, if you've been talking to him, you'd always have came away with that question mark in your mind. There's something not right about that boy. Something just doesn't gel, or it doesn't sit well with him. You wouldn't be putting too much confidence in him. And look at verse 14. Do you remember here they were supposed to destroy all that was there? And Samuel said, "What meaneth then this bleating of sheep in mine ears?" There wasn't supposed to be any sheep left there. Verse 8, "To utterly destroy all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spurred Agag, and the best of the sheep, and of the oxen, of the fatlings, and of the lambs, and all that was good, and they would not utterly destroy them." That was so much Saul, wasn't it? He just had his own idea about the thing, and he was going to deal with it in a way that wasn't thorough. And folks, sin isn't like that. It has to be dealt with ruthlessly. But notice here when the wall came down, that the battle really still goes on. Again, I'm in the book of Deuteronomy. Sin is just one of the things we mentioned to you here, making progress. Progress against sin, progress in walking with the Lord itself, progress in doing what you do for the Lord. We mentioned the rota there, cleaning the church. Please don't think that's something insignificant. That's so important. As is every part of the work. Progress in witnessing for him, being able to speak for him. It's not easy sometimes, you know that. But over there in Deuteronomy 6 and verse 10, Deuteronomy 6 and verse 10, it says, "And it shall be when the Lord thy God hath brought thee into the land which he sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities which thou buildest not, and houses full of all good things which thou fillest not, and wells digged which thou diggest not, vineyards and olive trees which thou plantest not, when thou shalt have eaten and be full," it says then, "beware lest thou forget the Lord, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. And thou shalt fear the Lord thy God and serve him, and thou shalt swear by his name. Ye shall not go after their gods of the gods of the people which are round about you. For the Lord thy God is a jealous God among you, lest the anger of the Lord thy God be kindled against thee and destroy thee from off the face of the earth." There's a great warning in those words. But folk, as we look out, and we look back, and every one of us can say, well, there's a wall of doubt, maybe. Maybe there's a wall of anger. Certainly we mentioned a wall of despair or sorrow and all of those things, and we didn't know how we were going to get to maybe even December 2018, but the Lord has brought us here. He's helped us. But that encouragement has driven us to try to progress more, and we want to do that more and more, and the Lord will lead us step by step, whether we're battling against sin in our own lives, battling in whatever way that we are for the Lord. He will lead us step by step. That's what he would do for the people. Remember what it said over there in chapter 6 and the words we read? The people went up. That's what it says there in verse 20. The people went up. He led them step by step. And if you and I are to go on, there must be conquering in our lives in some ways. Sometimes we have to conquer a wrong spirit. Sometimes we have to conquer all kinds of personal things in our lives in order that we may go on with the Lord. The people here had to go in, and they had to do a thorough job. Now, you think of what we've read here. They went in and they utterly destroyed it, and compare that with what we read about Saul earlier on. And Samuel came along and he says, "What's the bleating? How come I hear the sheep? And I hear the oxen? I thought you were supposed to destroy all those." And then Saul was, "Ah, but." That was just Saul again. You compare the two together. You see, there will always be inviting compromises for God's people. There will always be inviting compromises. Saul was brilliant at it, at compromising. Joshua wouldn't have it. And there will always be inviting compromises. The Lord will lead us step by step. But we must conquer if we are to go on. And here's something for me today, and ministers and elders, and you know, we're always vulnerable. Always vulnerable. Over there in the Psalm 19 and the verse 12, it says, the psalmist says, "Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults." That was a good prayer. "Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous or proud sins. Let them not have dominion over me, then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression." Good for us to remember that we are always vulnerable. The psalmist here was an experienced person. And yet he said, Lord, cleanse me from secret faults and keep me back from sins of pride that are associated with pride. And folks, as we do come shortly to the end of 2018, and we look back and there's been change, and there's been walls too, and the Lord has dealt with the walls. I would say to my own heart today and to yours as well, let us go up. Let's go up. Because encouragement drives prosperity and progress. Now that meant putting feet to their ambitions to go up. They had to put feet to them. And so it is with us in the work of the Lord. So often the Lord deals with the wall. The wall was the main problem here. Of course, there were the king and the mighty men of valor, but they were so encouraged because the wall came down. There was a great fight in them. I don't know everything or a whole lot about war strategy, and I know some of you do, but I don't know a whole lot. But I know this, that very often there have been small numbers of men and women greatly outnumbered. But the problem has been for those who were in the greater number that there wasn't much fight in them. And those who were of the smaller number, while they were outnumbered, there was fight in them. And the fight that was in them drove them forward while the others fainted. And brethren and sisters, that is something that we want to bear in mind as well. As you seek to go up for the Lord, as you seek to progress with the Lord and to battle for the Lord and to go forward, the walls are down. We're asking the question, what now? Progress more. Let that encouragement that you've received from the Lord help you on. He understands about your struggles. Of course, when I look at my own heart, I have to say now, Karen, that's not laziness. He doesn't understand laziness, but he understands genuine struggles. Encouragement drove progress, but notice something else here. There was a very positive effect associated with this progress. If you look with me there, please, in Joshua chapter 6 and verse 24, it says, and they burned the city with fire and all that was therein. Why did they do that? Well, the fire purified the whole area. And fire is something which is often associated with purification. In fact, archaeological digs, and this again is extremely interesting for me anyway, archaeological digs have confirmed that there was a fire, a great fire in Jericho. The city was exceedingly wicked. The judgment had now come. And the fire was that which purified what was there. Now, we're not going to call down fire from heaven today. But when you progress and I progress, and we're battling, be it against sin or against doubt or against discouragement or feeling left out by friends or whatever the case might be, when we're battling against all of that, that will not go unnoticed, and you will have, you. I don't see you sometimes maybe from Sunday to the next Sunday unless you're out of the midweek prayer meeting. But maybe from Sunday to Sunday, you're in a wee corner and you feel, well, the Reverend Salt and others don't really understand just how difficult it is here. Well, we don't. The Lord knows. And if you and I in those little corners are battling, be it against sin, doubt, whatever the case might be, it will not go unnoticed. And you will have that effect of cleansing where you are, a preserving effect. You can imagine the corruption after they'd slain the whole city. And how things would have been if they had not burned everything with fire. And what Northern Ireland needs, is cleansing. Because there's sin on every hand. But when God does come and lead his people on and progresses us and encourages us and strengthens us and helps us to be, remember what the Bible says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works. That's what you're doing when you're progressing. You're battling against sin. You're saying, no, I can't do that. You're battling against doubt and you say, well, I'm resting in the word, I'm going to try and do that. You're battling against despair and you'll say, I know that we're living in a broken world and my heart is heavy, but the Lord has promised that his grace is sufficient for me and therefore I'm going to progress on. All of that is noticed. And it has an effect. I think I told you before maybe about the man who I was speaking to once at a wedding and he nodded over, speaking about just about salvation. Part of the conversation was about that, not all of it, but we were speaking and he just said, he said, my wife there and her friend, he says, it was them. I was one to the Lord through their lives. One to the Lord through their lives. A wonderful testimony for his wife to have. But brethren and sisters, this is not something which is not possible. You see, there they burned all of the city with fire. Apart from that, which then be commanded not to burn. And when there is that purity, it will, in a very powerful way, be seen and also affect worship. Over in 2 Chronicles 33, you see, while for worship we need a certain amount of people to come together to have a meeting. You know, I know the Lord said we're two or three are met together. We like to have more than that and people to come together. But worship is a heart thing. So therefore, purity is important. 2 Chronicles chapter 33. And I'll just read what it says in verse 15. This is concerning Manasseh. He was one of the most despicable characters in the Old Testament. Full of wickedness. Oh, he had a good upbringing, all right. But he didn't listen. Important to listen. He didn't listen until his back was to the wall. And then the Lord had mercy upon him when he called upon the Lord. But he turned into a reformer. It says in verse 15, and he took away the strange gods and the idol out of the house of the Lord, and all the altars that he had built in the mount of the house of the Lord and in Jerusalem, and cast them out of the city. And he repaired the altar of the Lord and sacrificed thereon peace offerings and thank offerings and commanded Judah to serve the Lord God of Israel. He had a great influence. He was interested in pure worship because he repaired the altar of the Lord. Don't we read about that over when we're reading about Elijah as well? Repairing the altar of the Lord. Repairing the altar of the Lord. So often the altar of the Lord is broken down. Do you remember what was said about inviting compromises? There's ecumenical altars too. But we won't be found worshipping there. If we want to follow on after the Lord, we'll be worshipping at the altar of the Lord. There was purity in worship here after Manasseh's conversion. And what a difference he made. You remember the bloodthirsty band that he was leading. What an influence he had to have in order for them to turn. And to listen to what he was now saying. He's a different man, different message. Purity in worship. Purity in walk. Psalm 119. Wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed thereto according to thy word. And then thy word have I hid in mine heart, that I might not sin against thee. Young man or woman, this is the secret for a good, pure, progressing walk with God in 2019. Take God's word and hide it in your heart. Hide it in your heart. There'll be purity in worship, purity in walk, purity in warfare. Ephesians chapter 6. Remember what we read of over in Galatians about the flesh lusting against the spirit and the spirit against the flesh. And it's an ongoing battle there. Ephesians 6 shows you how you can win. How you can be a winner. And folks, we would really, and I speak on behalf of the elders of the church and indeed of the whole presbytery, we would all want all of the people to be winners. Look, don't care if you're great, because I have no desire to be great. And I'm sure you haven't either. Very, very happy to be ordinary. But I want to be a winner in worshiping the Lord and in walking with the Lord and in warring for the Lord. Ephesians chapter 6. Warring for the Lord. You see, a pure church is a beacon, and I still believe tonight, even though I know we get visitors from time to time through the year, and the special meetings get a lot of visitors, but generally speaking, most of the village doesn't come along. I still believe the church has a great testimony, and is well spoken of, and so it should be. Not because I'm here, that's for sure, but because a pure church is a beacon. to beacon. And this purity in worship and purity in walk and purity in warfare is so important if there is to be, well, if there is to be the winning. Listen, young person, an older person, there will be people come to you before you're too far into 2019, and the whole content of the discussion with you will be to try to show you how we can find common ground with that which is not holy, that which is impure. Well, you want to avoid that and to flee from that and to remember that this, that encouragement here was a driver of progress, and that progress had a very positive effect, as illustrated here by the fire. It was all burned up. All the corruption was burned up. But notice something else, and I'll just mention this because our time has gone. Notice here that there was deliverance for some in the city. If you look there in chapter 6 in Joshua, you will remember Rahab, she was a woman of the street. And in verse 22, she had hid the spies, we know that. And we know about the red cord down from the window, down the wall. And she was to be delivered, and so she was. Her deliverance and that of her family is a great picture of God's salvation. And what God is able to do, even in the most difficult circumstances. And you read there that the young men went in and they brought her out, and her father out, and her mom as well, and her brothers, and all that they had. They brought them out and they left them without the camp. They weren't destroyed. They weren't destroyed. And that should encourage us as we go out into a community that is ripening for God's judgment. Remember this, God can save the most notorious. She was hardly a model of virtue. She was a harlot. But she was converted. And you read about her in Hebrews 11. And she was taken from the gutter and made a trophy of grace. And that is what God is able to do for those around us. He's able to come and deliver them. And he's able to make them trophies of grace as well. So as we finish, we just say, walls down, what now? Well, go forward. Go forward remembering what God has done for us in the past, in spite of all our weakness and all our doubt and all our despair and all of our, sometimes maybe even in our own heart, a lack of enthusiasm. Remember what God has done for us, and then remember that he's able to do more. And let us be like the people here where it says, the people went up. Look out to 2019 and let's go up together for the Lord, conquering for him. And trusting that he will continue to use us and to meet our need as we do that.